Hare Krishna. So today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Mahavishnu Prabhuji giving class on Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhuji, are you there?
Hare Krishna Masaji, yes I am.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. Thank you so much Prabhuji for your wonderful association. Please accept our humble obeisances, all those to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj, and please take over the call, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all the ISKCON Vaishnava Acharyas and Guru Maharaj. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text Number 2. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam Nina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padhaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedhanta Swamin Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisheshashan Yavadhi Paschati Deshitharine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So as mentioned, we are reading from Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text Number 2. Mesha dharmasya bharyasid dambham mayam cha shatruham asuta mitunam tattu niritir jagrihe praja. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Another son of Lord Brahma was irreligion, whose wife's name was Falsity. From their combination were born two demons named Dumba, or bluffing, and Maya, or cheating. These two demons were taken by a demon named Niriti, who had no children. Purport by our beloved Srila Prabhupada. It is understood herein that Adharma, irreligion, was also a son of Brahma, and he married his sister, Mrisha. This is the beginning of sex life between brother and sister. This unnatural combination of sex life can be possible in human society only where there is adharma, or irreligion. It is understood that in the beginning of creation, Brahma created not only saintly sons like Sanaka, Sanatana, and Narada, but also demonic offspring like Niriti, Adharma, Dambha, and Falsity. Everything was created by Brahma in the beginning. Regarding Narada, it is understood that because his previous life was very pious and his association very good, he was born as Narada. Others were also born in their own capacities according to their backgrounds. The law of karma continues birth after birth, and when there is a new creation, the same karma comes back with the living entities. They are born in different capacities according to karma, even though their father is originally Brahma, who is the exalted qualitative incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are two different points we can learn from this particular instruction or purport by Srila Prabhupada, but they are obviously connected. The first is understanding karma and how, as devotees, as Vaishnavas, how it does or does not affect our life, our existence, and our sadhana. In the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes how understanding karma is very difficult. Krishna says the intricacies of karma are very hard to understand. But there are some things we can appreciate and understand about karma. We know that the law of karma, oftentimes the law of karma is described as the law of cause and effect. And that is certainly true to an extent. However, that is a very limited understanding, very limited understanding. The law of karma, unlike, for example, Newton's law of physics, that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, the law of karma is far more intricate, far more nuanced as well. Anything that may happen, an experience, a situation, the resultant consequence is dependent upon numerous factors. It depends upon the maturity of all the persons involved. For example, if someone were to, we know stories in the Puranas, right? A saintly person experiences some difficulty. Because of their maturity, they do not take offense. Because of their spiritual development, they do not take offense. Because of their progress in their devotional life, they do not take offense for that situation. Whereas we see that there are others who do take offense. Whether or not a person takes offense influences the nature of the karma that results. For example, if someone were to offend me, Mahavishnu, you are this, 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 and that. Because I am not a very mature person, I will become offended, and I may react in an immature fashion. However, that person can go to someone who is far more advanced and mature, spiritually, emotionally, and so on, and say the exact same things, engage in the exact same activity towards that person, and that person, because of their maturity, does not react in a foolish fashion because of the maturity of that person. So even though the act of the perpetrator is the same, because it is being acted upon two different people of two different levels of maturity, then the perpetrator's karma, the perpetrator's consequences are different. There are sangskaras and vasanas. I don't want to go too much into this because we digress from the significance and the importance of the verse that Prabhupada is trying to explain to us. But there are sangskaras and vasanas. Sangskaras are impressions. Several months ago, I got a question in a class, and the person had asked, why is it that we do not remember the lessons we receive from the law of karma, right? We do not receive, the law of karma is there to teach us a lesson so that we do not engage in foolish activities. Why is it we do not remember what it was that led to our experiencing that particular difficulty, right? Something bad happens, we say, oh, it's your karma, but we don't have any recollection of what we did to deserve that particular result, right? So that was the question. Understanding sangskaras and vasas and how they work go to answering this particular question. Sangskara is an impression. That's what sangskara means. It's an impression. It's an impact. It's a scar that is left upon the consciousness or the subtle being, the subtle body, the sukshma sharir of the living entity. Every thought we have creates a sangskar. Every single thought. It may be a sangskar that is not a very deep impression upon our consciousness, but it is a sangskar nevertheless. It is an impression upon our consciousness nevertheless. Every action we do creates a sangskar, an impression on our consciousness. Every experience we go through creates an impression on our consciousness. Every situation we go through creates an impression on our consciousness. From the moment we wake up to the time we go back to sleep at night, we have experienced and therefore created hundreds of thousands of sangskaras in one single day. Studies have shown that the average person has between 14,000 and 25,000 different thoughts every day. I think it's far more than that, but so be it. Between 14,000 and 24,000 different thoughts every single day. These are sangskaras. So we are creating thousands upon thousands of sangskaras every single day. These sangskaras, these impressions upon the consciousness, these are just coming from our thoughts. Then there are experiences, things that happen to us, situations we're going through. Our own activities also create sangskaras, impressions upon our consciousness. They leave a residual effect upon our consciousness. So thousands upon thousands of these sangskaras are imprinted upon our consciousness every single day. These sangskaras give rise to what are called vasanas or tendencies. The deeper the sangskar, the greater the indentation of the sangskar upon our consciousness, then the greater is the impetus of a vasana, of a particular tendency. Say, for example, to make this a little more practically understood, for example, if someone mistreats me, someone says something to me, Mahavishnu, you are this, 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 and that. I'm walking down the street. I'm walking through a rose garden, let's say. I'm walking through a rose garden, wonderfully experiencing, smelling the roses, appreciating the sights of the sounds of the birds. These experiences creating so many different sangskaras on my consciousness. And based on the conditioning of my mind in the modes of material nature, then their vasas are developed accordingly. So I begin to appreciate and love certain types of flowers, the roses and the birds and so on and so forth. Then I have a proclivity to seek out rose gardens. So be that as it may. But while I'm walking through this rose garden, say, for example, someone comes up to me and says, Mahavishnu, you are this, 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 and that. And I become, because of my conditioning and the modes of material nature, I become extremely upset and angry. I become infuriated. I may even perhaps violently react and get into a fight with that person. For example. So what has happened in this entire situation? I'm walking through the garden. I'm experiencing the smells of the rose, the sights of the flowers, the sounds of the birds, the beauty of the setting. Then someone says something to me that is very offensive, I think is very offensive. I get into a fight. So from the beginning of my entering into this garden all the way up until the end of, say, this violent interaction, so many sangskaras have been created. So many. Some more impactful, some more significant than others. Some very deep, intense sangskaras have been created, and some not so deep and intense sangskaras have been created. Indentations, impressions. So what happens a week later when I walk through the same garden, or even a different garden in a different country? I'm in a different garden, different rose garden in a different country. What happens? These sangskaras, the deep sangskaras that have been created in the previous interaction, feeling offended, getting into a violent interaction, they overwhelm the experience of smelling the nice roses, appreciating the garden, appreciating the sights and sounds. Say, for example, in the previous interaction, the person who had offended me happened to be of a particular ethnic or nationality, a particular ethnic background. So months later, when I'm in a different country, walking in a different garden, experiencing a different rose garden, then when I see a person walking through the rose garden, of the same, a different person, but of the same ethnicity, what happens? Because of these samsaras, sorry, these samskaras in my consciousness, then certain vasanas are awakened, certain tendencies. I immediately become anxious. I immediately become stressed. I immediately begin to look at that other person in fear or in anxiety. I lose my awareness or my appreciation of the garden around me, because these vasanas, born of the samskaras, have overtaken my consciousness. So this is an example to understand how their samskaras are created, and they give rise to various vasanas or tendencies. Say, for example, going through the garden, it was a wonderful experience. There was no negative experience. So those samskaras are impressed upon my consciousness. Then a certain tendency develops of wanting to experience walking through gardens. When I'm in a different country at a different time, I seek out a rose garden. That tendency to seek out a rose garden is there. Now the question arises, as this person had once had asked me several months before, why is it that we do not remember various interactions from birth after birth, right? Because as we see, Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport that the karma follows the living entity, birth after birth. In the same way, as the samskaras and vasanas followed me within this life, they also follow me life after life. In my career, I work in politics. Here in the United States, there's, I don't want to get so much into politics, but just for an example, there is the right and the left. And my job involves dealing with liberal politics in the United States. And one of the liberal political ideas, ideology, is this idea of capital punishment, right? If you commit a murder, then you should be executed by the state. I was talking to a colleague, and we had went to a deep discussion about capital punishment, because we, as we know, in the Vedas, capital punishment is part of the sociological justice, system of justice in the Vedas. So we got into this very deep discussion about capital punishment. This ties very much into understanding karma. This also ties into the question of why is it that something may happen to me, it may be because of my karma, but I do not see how I deserve that experience. We know the story of Mandavya Muni. Right, Mandavya Muni was a muni, a sage, sitting in his ashram, doing his sadhana, his meditation, and several robbers in the kingdom had committed some crimes, assaulted some people, stole some jewelry, and they were running away from the king's guards. They ran into the ashram of Mandavya Muni, and they dropped all of their weapons, all of their looting, all the things that he stole. They dropped it in Mandavya Muni's ashram, in his hermitage, his kutir. So when the king's guards, they tracked the robbers to Mandavya Muni's ashram. They went into his ashram and they saw that all the evidence was there in Mandavya Muni's ashram, in his kutir. And they arrested him, thinking that he was the thief. He was the criminal. And he was executed. Mandavya Muni then, upon reaching the boat of Yamaraj, was quite upset. He says, "What have you done? I was peacefully sitting in my meditation. You've come and you've allowed this injustice. I've been wrongly accused and put to death. Why have you allowed this to happen?" And Yamaraj explained, "Well, when you were a child, you had tortured small creatures, birds and insects and other living entities, so you had to experience this yourself." Mandavya Muni was not too impressed with that answer. Mandavya Muni said, "Well, I was a child, I was an ignorant child, I did not know any better. How could you possibly hold me accountable for what I did as an ignorant child?" And then he cursed Yamaraj, and as we know, Yamaraj then took birth as Vidura. This is what Srila Prabhupada is talking about in today's purport. Even though we do not understand where or how we deserve a situation, to us it seems like this is something that is we're experiencing misery that we do not deserve to experience. When it's explained, it is part of our karma. We do not accept it because we think, "Well, what? I have not deserved this." The fact of the matter is that the law of karma is so perfect . Many of us are grihasthas and we have children, and we see each child, if we have multiple children in our family, we know that each child has a completely different proclivity, completely different tendencies and nature. And just for an example, we may say that one child has a proclivity for music, another child has a proclivity towards STEM, mathematics, technology and science, for example. Where does this come from? These are vasanas carried over from a previous life. But then that's just on the positive side. On the negative side, we see that there are children that have a proclivity towards or have a tendency towards violence. They have a tendency towards criminal activity. Where do these tendencies come from? And why is it that some children have a tendency, proclivity towards violence, and some children do not? This is because of the law of karma. I do not have a tendency to steal. Why is that? Because somewhere in the history of my existence, I have learned the lesson of not stealing. Maybe in a previous lifetime, I stole something. I was punished for having stolen something. In this lifetime, I have no tendency, no proclivity towards stealing. I do not remember the punishment that I may have experienced in a previous lifetime. I do not need to remember the punishment. I do not need to remember, say, for example, if it's having my hands cut off. I do not need to remember the trauma of the punishment. And this is the beauty of the law of karma, the way the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna has set up the creation. I do not need to remember the trauma of the punishment. That is not necessary. The lesson, however, remains. So the punishment, for example, if it's capital punishment, executing a murderer. Execution of a murderer makes a very, very powerful, or imprints a very, very powerful sanskar on the consciousness of that living entity. Very powerful. That sanskar gives rise to a tendency, a vasana, which precludes that living entity from murdering in future lifetimes. This is how the law of karma works, even in terms of punishments. So punishment is meted out because punishment imprints, gives an impression upon the consciousness of the living entity, which in turn creates or gives rise to various vasanas or tendencies, both positive and negative. Now, all of these vasanas, sanskars, all these things are based on prakriti, the modes of material nature. There are three types of karma. There is sanchita, kriyamana, and prarabdha. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I want to get to the point, the most important point of this particular purport, at least in my own realization. But let's go a little bit through this understanding of what karma, these three types of karma. Sanchitta is the karma that is accumulated, it is with us, but it is not yet fructified, is a word Prabhupada uses. It is not yet manifest or fructified. It is there, it is waiting for its time to manifest. That is sanchitta. Then there is kriyamana. This is karma that is in preparation for manifestation. It is about to happen. Then there is prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma is karma that is manifested and is largely out of our control. It has already happened, right? We are born in a particular country and we are of that particular ethnicity. That is prarabdha karma, for example. It's already happened. There's not much we can do about it. And it's already playing out. Things that are happening outside of our control, right? We are walking down the road and someone hits us with a car. Prarabdha karma. This is karma that is happening, it's manifesting, there's not a whole lot of that we can do about it. A common example used to help us understand this is prarabdha karma is like when the archer shoots an arrow. The arrow, once the arrow is shot, it's in flight. The archer has very little control over what happens after that point. The arrow is shot, it's in the air, it's in flight. What happens at that point, the archer or the living entity, let's say, can only enjoy or suffer what happens after that. It's already in the air, it's already flying. The living entity only experiences from that point forward. That's prarabdha karma, the arrow in flight. When the living entity has put the arrow to the bow, but has not yet shot the arrow, is in preparation for shooting the arrow, that is kriyamana. That is the stage where there is some control over where we're going to shoot the arrow, how things are going to play out. Some control. Some influence from our vasanas, our tendencies. That is kriyamana. Sanchitta is the quiver of arrows. We have a quiver, and in that quiver there are arrows. Those arrows is sanchitta. That accumulation of arrows is sanchitta karma. It's not yet being put to the bow. It is not yet in flight, but it is there, and it's going to be expended. in that quiver of arrows, there are many, many different types of arrows, long arrows, short arrows, heavier arrows, arrows with different types of tips, different types of heads, some that are sharp, some that are not so sharp. These are sangskaras and vasanas. The different types of arrows, like different types of sangskaras and vasanas. So when we shoot an arrow, when an arrow is in flight, depending on the type of arrow, there are certain types of effects, right? There are certain types of experiences, depending on the different types of arrows. In the same way, because we have various sangskaras from previous lifetimes, certain tendencies have developed, then we experience life in many different ways. Now, this is where we come to the importance of tying all this into today's verse. The spiritualist wants to free themselves of karma, material conditioning, material nature, suffering. So the spiritualist tries to eliminate karma. So they take off the quiver of arrows, right? If they don't have a quiver of arrows, there are no arrows to shoot. They put away the arrow that they were had attached to the bow. There's no arrows, there's nothing to shoot. There's no prarabdha karma, there's nothing to experience. Many different types of religions and philosophical ideas, this is the goal, to be free of the experiences in material nature. As I mentioned, sangskaras, vasanas, these all take place when the consciousness is conditioned in material nature. So many different types of philosophies, spiritual paths, are to get rid of all of these arrows, to get rid of karma, to be karma-free. The Vaishnava, the devotee, is different. The devotee, rather than dropping the arrows, the devotee engages in yukta vairagya. The devotee adds Krishna. The devotee, like Arjuna, develops a relationship with Krishna, says, Krishna, where do you want me to shoot the arrows? How do you want me to live my life? When Krishna is standing next to us, when our consciousness, when we are Krishna conscious, that's what it means to be Krishna conscious. When we are Krishna conscious, several things happen. The arrows, the karma that we had, is completely purified, because as we know, where there is Krishna, Krishna is all auspicious. Any arrows that we had in our quiver, any karma that we had, is completely transformed and taken over by Krishna. Any karma that is beginning to manifest is completely taken over and taken care of by Krishna. Some parabra karma may remain, and Prabhupada mentioned, he called it when you turn off the electricity of a fan, but there is still motion. Some parabra karma may remain, but the Krishna conscious person is neither adversely nor positively affected by parabdha karma. The Vaishnava is neither positively nor adversely by parabdha karma, because the Vaishnava is in association with Krishna. The Vaishnava in association with Krishna is not adversely affected or positively affected by prarabdha karma. It is irrelevant in relation to their connection with Krishna. this is a very important difference between some types of spiritualists and the Vaishnava. Many spiritualists want to negate. They want to get rid of all karma, and that's understandable. I mean, who wants to be saddled with all types of karma, right? There's some religions that talk about if we give up all activities, then there's no question of us experiencing misery, right? There's no question of us experiencing difficult circumstances. We give up activities. We give up the desire to experience so-called happiness in this world, in the material level, the material plane. Then we don't have to experience misery. We attain nirvana. This is the dropping, giving up of all activities, trying to get rid of all karma. But that is temporary, because it is the nature of the jivatma. It is the nature of the soul. We are Satchidananda. We are Anandamaya. The jiva is Anandamaya. The Vaishnava develops a loving relationship, becomes Krishna conscious. And in that loving relationship with Krishna, the quivers we have in our arrow are transcendental. The prarabdha karma also becomes an instrument of the Lord. Krishna may choose to transform it or not. When Arjuna spoke to Krishna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he said, Krishna, as long as I have you, I told this story before, several months ago, about the story in the story of Abhimanyu. Arjuna says, as long as I have you by my side, whatever happens, it is for my benefit. This is when the devotee, the living entity, the jivatma, has Krishna by their side. Now, another question arises, why is it, let me check the time here. Okay, another question is, why is it that we saw in this particular translation, right? All of these unfortunate qualities are created by Lord Brahma. Falsity, adharma. What else? Let me pull up the translation again. Another son of Lord Brahma was irreligion, whose wife's name was Falsity. From their combination were born two demons named Dumba, or bluffing, and Maya, or cheating. These two demons were taken by a demon named Nariti, who had no children. All these things are created by Brahma. So the question is, why is this so? Why does the Lord allow the creation of such personalities, such attributes, that only causes us problems? Why would Krishna allow for that type of creation? The answer is twofold. The facility is given for the living entity to, as we know from the Upanishads and the Puranas, to go from tree to tree trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree. In order to experience going from one tree to the other, the living entity experiences both happiness and distress. The living entity experiences both pleasure and pain. Why is this so? Because the living entity is existing in a reality, a material reality, that is necessary or that is controlled by the law of karma. A reality that is separate from Krishna and is therefore controlled by prakriti, the laws of nature, material nature. These laws enable the living entity to experience both pleasure and pain. But these laws can be manipulated. It is possible to live in the material world and experience mostly satisfaction. There is death, birth, old age, and disease, but it is possible to experience mostly pleasure in this world, in this creation, whether on this planet or in heavenly planets. It is possible by adhering to the various laws of karma, dharma, and so on. But this is in relation to the senses. This is happiness and experience in relation to the senses. So as long as we are conditioned by what is pleasurable to our senses, then that experience also has a duality. If we experience happiness, there's a corresponding experience of unhappiness. If we want to experience unending satisfaction and fulfillment, the senses are no good for that. For that, we have to purify our consciousness. For that, we have to come to our constitutional nature of Nitya Das. We have to come to our constitutional nature, manifest our constitutional nature of Ananda Maya. It is a completely different level of reality. But what is necessary, and I'll begin to wrap up here, what is necessary in order for us to have that Krishna consciousness, in order for us to experience reality or manifest our spiritual reality, our spiritual existence, our spiritual nature, in order for that to happen, we must choose Krishna. Because that is what love requires. Love requires choice. If there is no choice, love cannot exist. If my boss comes to me and says, Mahavishnu, do you love me? I'm going to say yes. Essentially because my well-being depends upon my boss writing my salary. It's a crude example, but you get my point. Only when there is freedom of choice can there be love. And this is why Prabhupada describes that we are, as the bird in the tree, going from tree to tree, and Paramatma Krishna follows and does not judge, only watches, witnesses, and waits. There are some philosophies there are some philosophies that like to say that God is punitive. Krishna is not punitive. The law of karma does what it does, but Krishna is not punitive. If you hold a brick in the air and you drop it on your foot, is that Krishna's fault? Is that God's fault? The problem is that this may happen over several lifetimes, so we like to blame God. If I'm standing here right now and I drop a brick on my foot, yes, it's my fault. But the problem is that we do not see this over lifetimes, right? We drop a brick 3 lifetimes ago, and it falls on our foot in this lifetime. All we're experiencing is that the pain of this lifetime. We have no recollection of our, just like Mandavya. He has no recollection of what he did as a child. We have no recollection of what we did in previous lifetimes. We're experiencing part of the karma in this lifetime, but we have no memory of what we did in previous lifetimes to cause our suffering in this lifetime. So we blame God. It's karma. born of our own vasanas and samskaras. Now we must purify those vasanas and samskaras. And that purification comes from Krishna consciousness. When we are Krishna conscious, samskaras and vasanas do not stick to our consciousness because our consciousness is pure. In relation to Krishna, samskaras and vasanas do not stick to our consciousness. There is prarabdha karma. That's going to play out. But samskaras and vasanas do not stick to our pure Krishna consciousness. And that's why Krishna is to be added to our lives. But we have to make the choice of choosing Krishna. We have to make the choice of involving Krishna. We have to make the choice of connecting to Krishna. Because without choice, there is no love. Now, coming to the most, at least for me, the most important point of today's purport, the realization I had in reading it this morning was association. It is through association that we gain and maintain the desire to have Krishna as part of our lives, to connect with Krishna, to develop in Krishna consciousness. It is through association that we develop the desire to choose Krishna. Association is the key. Many of us are parents. We know that we try to keep our children away from, let's just say, negative association. And we try to keep our children in the association of, or in the association of other children who are positive influences. It becomes very, very difficult in this day and age with social media. It becomes very, very difficult when they are teenagers. They're very susceptible to their association, their peers. So we know this. Association is absolutely critical. Absolutely key. In the purport today, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that because of Narada Muni's association, he is an exalted personality. So our association is the key. Association is the beginning of our transforming our existence. Through association, we develop the desire to choose Krishna. In choosing Krishna and having Krishna as part of, having Krishna consciousness, samskaras and vasanas do not stick to our consciousness. We are under the direction, protection, association, connection with Krishna. That is Brahman realization. That is more than Brahman realization. That is Bhagavan realization. On that level of consciousness, samskaras and vasanas do not stick. Even our prarabdha karma is changed because Krishna has the ability to transform our prarabdha karma. Everything is transformed when we have Krishna. Everything is transformed in Krishna consciousness. Choosing Krishna becomes very, very easy when we have good association. Remember, as I mentioned before, we create hundreds of thousands of samskaras every day. These samskaras can lead us away from Krishna. These samskaras can lead to vasanas, tendencies, which lead us away from Krishna. These tendencies then give rise to actions. This is samsara. Samsara means there are samskaras. Samskaras lead to vasanas, tendencies, and then we act on those tendencies. That action creates further samskaras, which create further vasanas, and then we act. that actions create further samsara. And this is samsara. The wheel of samsara goes around and around and around and around. But when we are connected, when we have chosen Krishna, all our activities are transcendental. The conditioning of our consciousness becomes purified. When we are neophytes and we are developing, we are growing in our Krishna consciousness, our sadhana activities, even though they may be mishra or tainted with the triguna, the modes of material nature, they may be tainted, that's fine. But at least the activities, our sadhana activities, are creating a kind of spiritual vasanas or tendencies in the mode of goodness. Brahminical tendencies. Now, the material mode of goodness is not where we should stop. We're trying to get beyond the mode of goodness to Shuddha Sattva, but it is in a very important start to bring the consciousness to a higher level of existence and understanding. Not to mention that our sadhana activity begins to purify the consciousness altogether, begins to purify the consciousness of the three modes of material nature. But the key point, the most important point, which we can take from this verse, at least which I will take from this verse, is association. That's where it begins. Because so many thoughts come through our minds throughout the day. We already have so many vasanas. We're already burdened by so many samskaras or impressions in our contaminated consciousness. If we're in the right association, it can help steer us towards uplifting spiritual activities. But we must constantly try to remain in the right association. If we cannot physically remain in the proper devotional, spiritual association of devotees, then we should do so by this wonderful service here. This teleconference of chanting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam every morning. This is association. Reading Srila Prabhupada's books every day, that is association. Hearing from our spiritual masters, that is association. From our gurus, from Vaishnavacharyas, reading. These things are association. These experiences, this association, just like the experience of walking through a rose garden, creates vasanas and samskaras. When we read and hear, when we're in the association of devotees, it creates tendencies. The experiences create tendencies. Which further propels us to engage in more spiritual activities. And because these spiritual activities are connected to Krishna, they are purifying. They're purifying of the consciousness. And this purification of the consciousness begins to destroy sanchitta karma, begins to destroy samskaras and vasanas that we've accumulated over so many different lifetimes. So I will end there, and if there are any questions or comments, please share. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. So Prabhuji, you were talking about sanskaras. So it's very important. All our kids, you know, they go to public school and whole day they will be there. So they get something from the others, like association with teacher and friends. So how to deal with that, Prabhuji?
That is an excellent, excellent point, an excellent, excellent question. Two things comes to mind when you ask that question. Yes, our children unfortunately have to go to public school, and there are so many influences in public school, and those influences pile so many sanskaras and vasanas on our children, and they create so many sanskaras and vasanas being in that environment. Yes. The one thing we can do, two things come to mind. The first is we have to, as parents, we have to do as much as we can to counter that, especially as Prahlad Maharaj says, when our children are young, 4 and 5 years old, we have to do whatever we can to counteract that. In the home, when the children come home, we must have a temple in our home. Must. For those of us who have children, we must, even if we're living 2 blocks away or 5 minutes away from the mandir, from the temple, we still should have a mandir in the home for our children, if for no other reason. Of course, we should always have a mandir in our home, but especially for children. Have a mandir in the... No, that's not a very good example because I was actually in Gurukul, so that doesn't really count. So what I was going to say was I went to many Gurukuls in my life. Some Gurukulas, we went from the Gurukula ashram area to the larger mandir, and we participated in the morning program with the adults. And that's what Srila Prabhupada instructed. That's what Srila Prabhupada wanted. But there were other Gurukulas that had both. There were temples, the mandir where the adults went to, and we participated there. But there was also a smaller mandir in the Gurukul itself. In the Mayapur Gurukul, we had a temple right in the Gurukula. And there, we actually engaged, we ran the Gurukul temple. The Mangalarti, the offering, the Boga offerings, the puja, everything we did in the Gurukula, in the mandir in the Gurukula. We should have this for our children at home, even though we should take our children as much as possible to the main mandir in our community, in our city, wherever we live. But we should also celebrate Janmasri for our children in our home, right? Srila Prabhupada had his own Ratha Yatra as a child. So any festival activity that's happening in the main temple, we should do it with our children at home. That'll help balance or even counteract the influences they're getting. And the earlier we do this, the better. Because once we know once they become teenagers, if you haven't started when they're very young and you try to start when they're teenagers, it becomes much more difficult. You have to use much better parental psychology. But when we start when they're children, the younger, the better. The second thing that comes to mind is the instruction of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada called the children of his disciples, of his devotees, as Vaikuntha children. It is very unfortunate. We should have, and I am biased because I am a product of Srila Prabhupada's Gurukulas, so I am biased. Prabhupada's Gurukul system had some unfortunate history, but the instruction remains. We must have Gurukulas, as many Gurukulas as possible. If we read the instructions about Srila Prabhupada on education, Prabhupada would not compromise on this. The educational systems in Kali Yuga, he called them slaughterhouses. ISKCON has done so many wonderful, is doing so many wonderful things, but this is one area where we, as our commitment to Srila Prabhupada, we have fallen behind. There should be, wherever there are, I would say, 10 or more children in the community, there should be a Gurukula. Now, of course, Gurukulas are very, very difficult to run. They are extremely difficult to run. Schools are very difficult to run. There's no denying that. But as devotees, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we know the importance, the critical importance of having Krishna conscious education for our children. There should be gurukulas within an hour's drive of every major devotee community, anywhere in the world. There's no shortcut. There is no shortcut. We can have mandir in our home, absolutely. We should encourage and celebrate the various festivals. Teach our children how to chant japa at home. Teach our children to read. Inspire them to read at home. Mangalarti, the various activities of a full mandir at home, as much as possible. And as young an age as possible for our children. But there is no getting around the fact that in terms of education, Srila Prabhupada was not, Gurukula was not a quaint idea. Gurukula was not a quaint idea that Srila Prabhupada, oh, be nice, be happy. If we're going to have children, then, well, okay, let's have Gurukulas. No. Srila Prabhupada's instructions on establishing Gurukula were clear and repeated. He did not want what he called his Vaikuntha children going to slaughterhouses. Srila Prabhupada said in every temple there should be a Varnashram college. In every temple, that is a direct quote, there should be a Varnashram college wherever there is a center. Srila Prabhupada said, wherever there is a center, there should be a Varnashram college. That was Srila Prabhupada's direct instruction to the Minister of Education in the 1970s. So there is no shortcut. We must establish Gurukulas wherever we have our centers, wherever we have our community of devotees, wherever we have our Vaikuntha children. Otherwise, we're sending them to slaughterhouses. Forgive me, I don't mean to, I feel very strongly about this point, and I don't want to cause offense. I don't mean to cause offense. Many of us, myself included, we are struggling very hard to share Krishna consciousness with our children. So I don't mean to cause offense. I really, really don't. But this is one area, one major area in our society, our ISKCON society. It is an instruction of Srila Prabhupada that we must, absolutely must. It is as important as book distribution. It is as important as book distribution. It is far more difficult. It is far more difficult. But it is equally as important. For every 100 books we send out, this is my own realization, for every 100 books we give in Sankirtan, if we can create one Vaishnava through the Gurukul system, the children are already there. They're already with us. They're already in our families. They're already part of our communities. The fastest growing religion in the world is Islam. And it is not because they go on Quran distribution. It is not because they distribute the Quran. I'm not bashing Islam. That's not what I'm doing here. The facts and the statistics are Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world for a reason. And it is not book distribution. And I'm not saying as ISKCON, our mission is book distribution. But our mission is book distribution not for book distribution's sake. Our mission is book distribution in as much as it leads to education. That's why there's book distribution. Islam is the fastest growing religion because they inculcate their children in Islam from the earliest age possible. That's why. and they have large families. But they ensure that in their family, their children grow up in the Islamic tradition. That's why it's the fastest growing religion on the planet. If you do studies of Christianity and Catholicism, at least in the United States, it is diminishing because the youth in the Christian communities and in the Catholic communities are not taking to their religion for whatever reasons. The youth, the Bible is everywhere, but the youth are not taking to their religion for whatever reason, and therefore Christianity and Catholicism is on the decline, at least in the United States. I would say in most of Western Europe as well, but is on the decline in much of the world. This generation of youth in the United States, they're not going to church. The younger generations. We have in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, I get into these discussions. I'm going to stop here because I don't want to offend anyone. But I've been in so many discussions with many of my own peers, persons I grew up in Gurukula with. They don't want to have anything to do with Gurukula because of some bad history in Gurukula, so be it. But the instruction remains. The instruction remains. We should not have a problem in ISKCON about where should I send my children for spiritual education. We should have numerous choices. No matter where you live, you should have two or three choices of where we can send our children for Krishna conscious education. My spiritual master, and I will end this particular question on this point, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj gave a lecture in Mayapur many, many years ago, my God, 25 years ago, and he was talking about this point in a more broader mentioned. He was saying that ISKCON, it is our duty that the Back to Godhead magazine should be like Newsweek and Time magazine. The MITs, Harvards, IITs, we should have Krishna conscious equivalents of those. And he was going down the list of how, as a society, we are not a multinational corporation. We are not an international corporation. We are international society. That's the key. That we are not a corporation. We are not a conglomerate. We are a society. And it starts with our children. Again, I do not mean to offend, but it is a very, very important point. An extremely important point. Every center, Srila Prabhupada said, must be a Varnashram college. Not for adults. These are for children. Varnashram college, when Prabhupada started the first Varnashram college was in Vrindavan Gurukula. They were for the kids who were 12 and up. Srila Prabhupada called it a Varnashram college. For the teenage students. That was what he called a Varnashram college. Also for adults, but the first one was established in the Vrindavan Gurukula. For training children, not only in Varnashram Dharma, but in relation to Daivi Varnashram, in connection with Krishna. I will stop there. That's my realization on my two points I would share on that particular point. Please forgive me if I came too strong on the idea, but I feel very, very strongly about this particular instruction and emphasis of Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, Prabhuji, yes, if we do not have access to Gurukul, can homeschool be an option for same purpose?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, homeschool is definitely an option. Gurukuls are very, very difficult to run. I've been a Gurukul teacher. I've been a Gurukul principal. They're very, very difficult to run. Absolutely. I'm not denying that. And so there's a reason why, there are many reasons why they're not gurukuls. So yes, homeschool, absolutely homeschool. But of course, and homeschool is also difficult. It is not easy, especially as children get older. We may not have the time. We also have our own careers. We have to make sure they have, you know, a roof over their head, so on and so forth. But yes, homeschool is the next best option. Absolutely. Parent, Krishna conscious, parental cooperatives are also options. So yes, whatever we can do, whatever we can possibly do, whether it's homeschooling in our own home, making sure, definitely making sure we have a mandir in our home where the children, we teach the children how to offer boga. We teach the children how to at least offer incense once a day. When they're old enough, how to chant one round in front of Krishna. Have pictures of Krishna throughout our home. That's the only way we're going to have a chance of counteracting the association they're getting in these other schools.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Yeah, your classes are very thought-provoking, and because you are thinking a lot in your preparation, coming up with something very wonderful. This is what Sri Prabhupada wanted, that we should use our intelligence to maneuver and bring out many solutions to the world problems and different things. So, very thoughtful class. Just one idea came, you brought the point of sanskara, I know. We discussed that. Yeah, and it's very practical, but sanskara, it's not made in like quickly, because what we see, what we are given in education, you know, our parents, teachers, and society, whichever society we become part of, whether we are born in a Muslim tradition or a Christian tradition or Hindu tradition or even Krishna conscious tradition, whatever due to the effect of our previous performance, what we receive in our Hare Krishna. Oh yeah, I thought I lost. So practice, when we are given practice in as discipline, then by practicing it becomes our habit. Unless we are given the practice, they don't become our habit. So what is habit? Mm. Habit is a repetitive practice. So this has been going on since eternity. You know, whatever practice we are given, it becomes our habit. Hmm. And the sum total of many habits become the culture or the sanskara.
Hmm.
Sanskara is not something just immediate thing. It's a sum total of so many habits becomes a sanskara over so many lifetimes even, you know.
Hmm.
And many samskaras, sum total of many samskaras becomes the swabhava.
Hmm.
So that's why when we see in a particular person, you covered it very nicely. When we see different, even children growing up, they have different proclivity and different tendencies. The impression from their previous sanskaras. What in Krishna consciousness, no matter which sanskara or which swabhava we have come, we are still stuck in the material world, either in the samskara or promote of ignorance or passion or even goodness. And we are still falling short to attain the fulfillment of the human potential. That's why the things which you discuss in our Krishna consciousness, we see that Krishna consciousness is a direct, immediate full package. But before coming to that point, people have to go through a lot of transformation, a lot of conflict with their previous sanskaras and swabhava. But Krishna consciousness is a panacea to all problems. But as you said rightly, our children, they need to be inculcated this impression and about this absolute knowledge. Otherwise, what happens? What they practice, even in the name of modern education or whatever, those impressions remain, but simultaneously, the spiritual or the absolute importance of Krishna consciousness has to be emphasized so that they don't feel deprived that, oh, other children are getting and doing so many things. Like Upanishadha says that as much as the education of the transcendence is important, is also the education of what is science. So these things will in the world go side by side. Before the education of science gets out of control, it's our duty to educate them in the transcendental subject matter. That way, the growing of children and others, they don't feel deprived that they have anything else. And that's why in the last sloka of 8th chapter in Bhagavad Gita is such an amazing thing Krishna promises. He says that Vedascha yagyascha tapascha chaiva daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam atyeti tatsarvam idam viditva yogi param sthanam upechyatyam. So when one takes to the process of pure devotional service, he is not deprived of all the other processes and culture and karma kand or jnana kand or all this very, very attractive to our conditioning of the three modes of material nature. But not only he gets the benefit of those things, but he ultimately achieves the highest, supreme destination, which is the fulfillment of the human potential. So simultaneously these things will go, and in order to create a good sanskara, the inculcation of spiritual values, they have to go simultaneously. And that way, they will always come on the right side. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you for sharing that. This wonderful realizations you sharing. Much appreciated. Hari Hari.
Thank you, Prabhupada. It's a very wonderful class, especially Samagari Mataji asked for the right question, especially for it's very necessary when they go to school and they learn so many kind of sanskara. But I like the point you were telling, Prabhupada. Means every festival we should celebrate in our home also, and they can learn and they can also participate. That is a very right, good answer for me, especially. And Maharaj was telling also, thank you so much, Maharaj. It's a really nice realization. Thank you for sharing. And also, I request all the devotees, we have also kids' class every day in the evening. Since we ever have kids, we read Krishna book and Bhagavad Gita and a story, any kids they can share, they can practice and they can memorize words and every day Krishna book. Whoever they are who have kids, they can join because there is very little kids. I mean, my daughters, they are joining and sometimes other kids. But please try to come and join in the conference. It's a half an hour class, but it's very helpful. Actually, my daughter, she started learning all the verses from the conference call only in the beginning. Lalitangi Mataji, Sukeshwari Mataji, they were doing.
And it's very helpful. Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Prabhuji, one more thought came to the mind. Can I share?
Please, of course, absolutely.
You know, in the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, actually, once a devotee in Los Angeles, just in the beginning few months of his joining Los Angeles ISKCON Ashram, our spiritual master is his evangelist Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami, Sripad Guru Maharaj. He visited Los Angeles and he was heading the Bhaktivedanta Institute scientific preaching. So that devotee from America, American devotee, he became very excited that, oh, scientific scientist, Prabhupada scientist is coming. So in the first very meeting, he asked Guru Maharaj, so Maharaj, what should I do to advance in Krishna consciousness? This is an American devotee just a few months in the temple, and he's excited that some scientist devotee is coming, you know, because science is so much influence in America, and somebody became a devotee. So he asked him, and he remembers exactly what Guru Maharaj told. He said, you should study and sing the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. In the first meeting, and he was totally taken aback what Maharaj was saying. Wow, I should study and sing the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. That was his impression. He shared before my sannyas initiation, so I was recalling it. Anyway, so in that Narottam Das Thakur song, one song is very powerful. Srila Prabhupada also quoted, where he says, Jnana Kanda, Karma Kanda, Kevali, Vishera Bhanda. Because of the desire for sense gratification, people, in the name of religiosity, they become attracted to the Jnana Kanda and Karma Kanda sections of the Vedas. Then how can they be rescued and given the highest purpose of the Vedas, that is the pure devotional service? So the Narottam Das Thakur, what he's trying to say, that only by Mahat Kripa, only by the Krishna arrangement, even those people who are very attached to those sections of the Vedas and consider themselves very advanced and religious and pakka, very tuned to the Vedas, Vedic culture and difference, all this conditioning is very, very strong, very, very strong. But when they will come to, by the causeless mercy, by the Swadhin Mahatripa. Swadhin Mahatripa means that they're just saying that Jahana Pahunche Ravi Taha Pahunche Kavi. You know? So Ravi stands for Krishna. And Kavi stands for the devotees, you know, the preachers. So where even Krishna does not reach, devotees go there and connect to the people, the highest purpose of the Vedas, even to those who are so attached to the Vedic culture and traditions and sanskars and all these things, but the real thing they are missing. So devotees say, just as Narottam Das Thakur is saying, you know, that this karma, if karma does not free you from karma bandhana, the repetition of birth and death, then our attachment to our good karma is also so much ignorance, so much wastage of labor. That's why Lord Krishna says, Yoga hai karma su kaushalam. If your karma does not lead to connection to Krishna, then you are not doing the karma or good karma even rightly. Ultimately, our karma has to lead to love of God. Yoga means love. Yoga means ultimate meaning of yoga means love of Krishna. So Yoga hai karma su kaushalam. You think that you are very expert in karma, you are very expert in doing this yajna and that yajna, but if your expertise does not lead to love of God, then you are falling short. So who will tell this? A devotee will come and will ignite him. Hey, you are apparently very expert in your work or karma, your education, your occupation, everything, but you are still stuck in the repetitive birth and death. You are not coming out of it, so how you can be so proud of your karma? You are not achieving the ultimate goal. You are remaining underachiever. You are underperformed. You are like underachiever. So if a person who is truly concerned about the highest perfection, because everybody wants to attain the highest goal. So devotee will feel the highest goal of karma or expertise in karma is to attain love of God, which will free you not only from repetitive birth of death, but will give you the highest destination of bliss. And then those who are very much attached to the jnana khanda, those who are the super sage, liberation into the... Then the devotee will tell there is something like Rupa Goswami describes in the place where he says that Brahmananda Bhavedesha Chet Paradha Guni Naiti Bhakti Sukham Bhode Paramanu Tulamapi. That the joy of Brahmananda, if you multiply by Paradha means half of the life span of Brahma, that's long, you know. If you consider 311 trillion and 40 billion, Paradha means half of it. So Brahma has passed half of his age, we know that, correct? So as much as Brahma has lived, that many times, if you multiply the Brahmananda, it cannot be measured in one dot of the unlimited joy of Bhakti Sukha, the ocean of Bhakti Sukha. So then, when a devotee can make that impression eventually on those people who are very much attached to Jnana Kanda, then... And by associating, they will experience the Kirtan Sukha and the joy of dancing. And they will find, yes, yes, what we are aspiring is nothing compared to the joy. So this is where our role eventually for eternity, if you want to say, at least for 10,000 years, will be that we will come across people who are very much attached to, through their sanskara, through their habits, through their cultivation, or through their practice, through their acquiring so much diplomas and sanskaras and different things, that we will be able to impress upon them to give them the ultimate purpose of all this, That way, our goal is going to be very, 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 very critical. And we cannot take it lightly, casually, okay, yes, we do all these things. In any sphere of our life, either within the family, as a mother, or as a father, or as a brother, or sister, or a friend, or relative, or in the job and everything, it should be our burning desire to really bring across or transpire in the people we meet the Krishna connection. Otherwise, we are doing a disservice to ourselves, also in our performance to our predecessors. And actually, if we appreciate enough the value of Krishna consciousness in us, then we will definitely value only in others, but we'll also be very compassionate to bring it across whosoever we come in. Now, life is a serious subject matter. It's a serious mission at every stage in every ashram of our Krishna consciousness. Thank you,
Krishna. Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. Wonderful, wonderful explanation and sharing and realizations and instruction.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. I have a small question, but maybe it's already late. Is it okay, Prabhu?
Please.
Prabhuji, my question is in sankara, means to cultivate the good sankara is should try to come in the mode of goodness. Yes?
Can you say that again, please? Can you start again, please? My connection is not very good. Can you start again, please?
To cultivate the good sanskara, try to live in the mode of fullness, or slowly, gradually, we try to come in mode of goodness, or how we can transcend our sanskara. the mood of goodness.
Yes, don't leave samskaras alone. As Vaishnavas, our activity is only in relation to Krishna. As we are related and connected to Krishna, then our natural constitutional nature, as Krishnanandati Das, take precedence over anything. So don't, that's why I did not want to go too much into samskaras, vasanas, and all these things, because sometimes it can be more confusing than helpful. But for Vaishnavas, particularly for Vaishnavas, we are not so much have to worry about samskaras in and of the importance of their connection to Krishna. Right? Like the story of the Brahmanas who were doing so many rituals, right? But when Krishna had a headache, they could not recognize that they should give the dust of their feet to Krishna, because there was so much concern with various samskaras and things like that, various rituals. So we, as Vaishnavas, all those different types of activities, rituals, whatever they may be, are secondary. They're only in relation to do they or do they not bring us closer to Krishna. That is the key point. So don't worry about samskaras. Don't worry about the... There's going to be... Impressions are going to be made. Habits are going to be developed anyway. Let's not worry about that. What we should worry about is what brings us closer to Krishna or Krishna's instructions or Srila Prabhupada's instructions. If we act on the instructions of Gurudev, if we act on the instructions of Prabhupada, if we act on the instructions of Krishna, then the tendencies, samskaras, vasanas, all these things will develop accordingly. So the first instruction is based particularly on our sadhana. As we develop and stick to our sadhana, Arjuna asks a similar question. In a way, in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Why Krishna tells Arjuna, Arjuna is saying, my dear Krishna, the mind is very difficult to control. How do I do this? Krishna says, abhyasa. There are two characteristics of abhyasa. Abhyasa means practice. Practice, the two characteristics of abhyasa, one is that it's regulated. The practice is regulated. It happens particular time, every day, constantly, and continually. But continuously. This is the first characteristic of abhyasa. The second is it's uninterrupted. The activity, the sadhana, the practice we're doing should be, as much as possible, uninterrupted. So when we go through our devotional life, following the instructions of our Gurudevs, following the instructions of Prabhupada and Krishna, then as we do these practices continually and without interruption, that will take over. That will, the various habits will form. Because we are, obviously, there's mishra, there is mix of the modes of material nature. That's okay. That will gradually become purified. Right? Sometimes we do a particular type of service because we have a particular type of inclination. Right? We come from our first introduction into spiritual life. We like to say, for example, to paint. Right? So what did Srila Prabhupada do? He told everyone to paint, all of his painters, to paint pictures of Krishna. So there's some mishra there. Right? The tendency to paint comes from various vasanas, samskaras, and so on. But in connection with Krishna, Prabhupada told him, you paint Krishna. So those same vasanas become completely purified in connection with Krishna. So let's not worry about, let's not be so concerned about various vasanas and this and that and the other, only that we use every aspect of our capacity, every one of our inclinations and proclivities in relation to Krishna. That is Yukta Vairagya. So engage in using our proclivities, our tendencies, in as much as we can do so in relation to Krishna. Then in doing that, in that connection with Krishna, that choosing of Krishna, that all other karma, samskaras, negative vasanas, conditioning by the three modes of material nature, that is purified. By the presence of Krishna, all those things are purified. We just might must make sure that in our life, we as much as possible add or include or make sure there is a presence of Krishna by following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, and Krishna, of course.
Yes, Prabhuji, actually, I could not ask properly question, but you answered very nicely. Actually, I wanted that answer only. Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna, if any devotee have any question or comment for Prabhuji? Otherwise, we can end the call. Once a call for the Kripa Sindhu.
Kripa Sindhu, 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 Kripa Sindhu